You're listening to Shooting Hoops with your hosts, Dia Miller and Adam Drexler.
Welcome to Shooting Hoops, a podcast about basketball and the Portland Trail Blazers. I'm your host, Dia Miller, here with my co-host, Adam Drexler, and a guest that we're going to introduce in just a minute. This is episode 3. Can you believe we made 3 episodes, Adam?
I know. 3 episodes. I feel like we've been here for a year now.
And we're only on 3. You can now find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and on YouTube. Having video has been really cool. We've been able to do some different things than you can do with just audio. Adam is really doing a great job editing and putting in clips and photos. So if you're not watching on YouTube, you might want to check that out because there are things you're going to miss. We're trying to kind of describe what you're seeing for those of you that are listening on podcast platforms. We'll try to paint a picture of what's going on. Our goal is to get these up as fast as possible. We know that this stuff is happening quickly. The YouTube videos will probably go up slightly before podcasts as well. So joining us today is a very special guest all the way from Houston, where Adam actually is located as well. Hall of Fame Trailblazers legend, Clyde Drexler. Clyde is also Adam's father.
So yeah, Hall of Fame dad, I might add.
Which That's really is the accomplishment. Yeah. So Clyde, I appreciate you joining us. Thank you for being here. I think this is going to be a really cool episode. Something I've been looking forward to since we started talking about doing this. How are you? What have you been up to? Tell us a little bit about what's going on with you right now.
Well, Dia, it's a pleasure to be here with you and Adam. You guys are doing an incredible job. I love your podcast. A lot of knowledge and entertaining as well. But what I've been doing, Dia, is just having fun, enjoying every day, because as you get older, you know, tomorrow is not promised. And so we do a lot of things with family, with friends. We do a lot of charitable giving, not only during the holidays, but year round. And yeah. So just enjoying life, enjoying that experience each and every day, along with a lot of golf. That's exactly what I've been doing.
I think we're gonna bring up golf here in a little bit. Adam and I have talked a little bit about your golfing, so I'm curious to hear more about that. Now, you're also the commissioner with the Big Three. That's kind of an exciting thing. How long have you been doing that?
About 5 or 6 years since the beginning of the Big Three. And that's co-founders Ice Cube and Jeff Quantnitz, his business buddy, partner. And they are incredibly visionary in what they've accomplished with the Big Three so far. Just Amy Trask was our chairman of the board, and just a lot of great players, incredible Hall of Fame coaches. 3-on-3 is a new sport, as Adam knows. Half court, professional basketball, it doesn't get any better. And it's been a lot of fun. You know, we're coached by Hall of Fame players like Julius Erving, George Gervin, Gary Payton, Charles Oakley, Lisa Leslie, Nancy Lieberman, Michael Cooper, Reggie Theus, Rick Mahorn, Rick Barry. I mean, I could Gilbert Arenas, Steven Jackson, who's won the last 2 titles.
What was that like to get to play together for not? I guess you guys weren't playing together, but Adam was playing, and you guys were kind of working together there for a little bit. How was that?
That was great because you know you're so proud of your kids. Adam has always been exemplary, awesome son. You know, never had a problem with him. He's into his own world. He's smart. People love him. He loves people. And so every day is a good day with Adam, trust me. But Adam came to the Big Three Combine, and people didn't expect him to play so well, but they didn't know he was that young and could play like he could play. And so he made a team. His team was very good. They came in 3rd or 4th place out of 12 teams. And so they had a very successful season, and Adam was a big part of that. He was coached by Rick Mahorn, and those guys all got along. They were like the fun team in the whole league. So it was great to watch him week after week.
That's really cool. Adam, what was it like playing with your dad being there?
It was surreal because normally I'm you know halfway across the country or in another place, random place, and kind of just has to hear details or catch little clips every now and then. But getting to have him there at the games and high five after a bucket or whatever was just the coolest experience. So really it was really fun. And then you're also playing against people that you admire and people that you watched your entire life. So anytime you're in the presence of legends, it's amazing. So I'm just grateful for the opportunity.
For sure. So the Trailblazers, we're going to shift a little bit here. Portland Trailblazers, they are starting off quite a record and getting people talking. Have you heard at all what's going on with the Blazers this year? Have you been following that team at all?
I always follow the NBA. My favorite two teams. Guess who they are,
dear? I would guess the Blazers and the Rockets.
The Portland Trailblazers, yeah. Number one. Houston Rockets, number two. I love them both. Those are the two teams I played for. So they invested in me, and so I invest in them, right? And so the Blazers are off to a good start. We won't talk about the Rockets. They need some help. But anyway, the Blazers are off to a very good start. Chauncey Billups is a heck of a coach. Perhaps one of the best young coaches in the game. If Damian Lillard is healthy, they're going to have a heck of a record this season. But the key is to get Damian healthy, because as he gets older, you know, it happens to everyone. You're going to start to have more and more injuries, and they need him on the floor.
Yeah. So we're recording this on Monday, the 7th. Dame is actually back tonight after his injury. And I don't believe there's a minutes restriction on him. So hopefully that means that he's back to, you know, being in a good place and can get back to being normal Dame that we've seen. Yeah. He came out really strong in the very first game this season and tied your record. Mm-hmm. You had held the record with the Trailblazers for the most points in a season opener. I believe it was 41. And Dame came out and tied it this season. So he's kind of creeping up there on some of these records you've had. He's also go ahead. Yeah.
I'll tell you, records are made to be broken. You know, we had a few more things. First of all, he's an outstanding player and an outstanding person. So if someone's going to break your record, Damian Lillard would be the guy you'd pick, first of all. But in an era of no hand checking, you should score more. Okay. But he can really get the job done. And he's so much fun to watch, because he's so professional on the court.
Yeah, and so this season, you currently hold the record for franchise points with the Portland Trailblazers at 18,040 points. That is so many points. That is, I mean, when you think about the fact that you scored 18,040 points, that is a lot of points. And Dame is creeping up on you. He's 375 points behind you. Probably more after tonight, or less after tonight, at 17,665. So he's set to break your record this season. How do you feel about that?
He'll break that record easily, trust me. All it takes is longevity and continued excellence. But there have been some great players that played through the Trailblazers for them through the years, notably guys like LaMarcus Aldridge. Even a guy like Kiki Vandeweghe, had he stayed healthy, he would have broken it. Michael Thompson, maybe. Phenomenal player, right? Even a guy like Brandon Roy, had he stayed healthy, he would have probably broken it. So that record is bound to be broken sooner or later. And I'm just happy because I won't have to answer any more questions about it.
Once you hold the record anymore, they're not calling you for a comment for it. That's coming up.
With a record like that, kind of what part does the team play in, you know, having a record like that where you can go game in and game out and score that many points? Like, talk about the kind of different rosters that you experienced, and like with the Blazers right now, they're a brand new look, and surprisingly Jeremy Grant was able to get it done the other night and hit a game winner over Phoenix. But Knight, talk about the different rosters and how you kind of had to adjust to keep up that excellent play.
Well, when you're the franchise player, there's a lot expected. First thing you got to do is be on the court. Because here's what a lot of people don't know. In the NBA, all 15 guys think they're the guy. Because everywhere they've been, they were the guy. And so if you're the guy on that team, you have to fight to continue to prove to the guys on your team that I'm still that guy. Because the minute you slip up, one of those guys is saying, hey, coach, I need more shots. I should be the guy, right? So that's the nature of team sports. And so it's never easy, is what I'm saying. But continued excellence, you're trying to win games. And if you got good coaches, they're going to put people in roles to help them succeed. Some going to get less shots. Some going to get more shots. But at the end of the day, it's all about trying to win and do what's best for the team. Now, to score that many points, you got to have longevity. You got to stay healthy. You're going to miss a lot of shots, too. I probably got the record for the most missed shots as well. So, you know, you got to be persistent. If you're not making shots on any given night, you can't quit. You got to keep playing hard, and you got to give it whatever you have. So you got to be strong-minded, strong-willed. You got to have the ability to persevere, because you're going to have a couple of bad games in a row. You're going to lose games. And so you can't get frustrated, and you just got to stay positive and keep giving your team the best chance to win. So that's what that record signifies to me. One, that my teammates had enough trust in me to keep giving me the ball and coaches to try to help them win. And two, that I never quit. And I'm going to give you what I got. And so that's what it says.
Yeah, I think that's a solid point. You know, those are things you don't really think about so much. You just think this guy's really good at basketball and he's scoring a lot of points. But there is a lot that goes into that. And part of that is teammates. And we've seen this team kind of evolve. And it seems like this season might be the strongest team we've seen around Dame in his time in Portland. So there's hopefully some exciting things coming. And maybe you won't have to answer any more questions about your records after this season.
It's a privilege either way. But you know, I don't want to take away from what they're doing on the court, because I'm a fan. I enjoy watching them play. And I'm just rooting for them with all my might, and hopefully they can make it to the finals. You know, that's what I'm looking for.
Yeah.
It's all about winning.
Yeah, yeah. I think this team could do it. I think this is a team, at least as of recent, that has the best shot of that we've seen in a while. If they keep doing it, they certainly have a chance.
Yeah, we've seen it night in and night out. They've been able to compete with some of these teams that are supposed to. Like this first half of the schedule, we were supposed to get beat by, you know, a lot of these teams, and we managed to win and stay at the top of the leaderboard. So,
well, two things that have happened: Chauncey Billups is a great coach, as I said. Damian has been playing at a high level, but Nurkic has been healthy. You got to keep him healthy. He hadn't been able to stay healthy for the last 2 or 3 years, and so that's got to be a point of emphasis, as well as Damian.
Nurk has been a big difference maker. When he's on, he's on, and the team does so much better. I saw a fact after the last game that said he has not missed a 3-point shot in 3 games. He hasn't missed one.
Well, he can really play. His game. Love his game. Very, very versatile.
Well.
Yeah, I think the Blazers now they're geared more towards being tough-nosed defenders. They're gritty this year as opposed to previous years. Now they've got guys like Jeremy Grant, Josh Hart, and Gary Payton Jr. who are all dogs on the court. Yeah. They can go out there and make those intangible plays.
But that's Chauncey Billups. You know, when he played with the Detroit Pistons, 7 straight Eastern Conference Finals, Mr. Big Shot was a great defender. And so he's putting his imprint on this team. So I give him a lot of credit.
I saw somebody say something the other day. I think it was a tweet that said something along the lines of Chauncey's essentially recreating that team with who they're bringing in and what they're doing, that it looks very familiar to what he did as a player there. So that's interesting that you say that, you know, that sounds like that might be the consensus here.
Yeah. No doubt.
You see it with like the game the other night. They even used kind of that Tayshaun Prince, if you remember, that kind of Swiss Army knife player. They did that with Justice Winslow the other night, where he almost had a triple-double with 9 assists, you know, running point. And he's done that in high school when he was here in Houston. So
yeah, we saw him.
Yeah.
And we root for Justice. We wonder why he hasn't been more consistent in his NBA career. But hopefully he's in a place, Portland, where he feels comfortable, because the Blazers, the fans, are the best in the world. And hopefully it can bring out the best in Justice Winslow.
I want to talk to you about fans in a minute, but Justice Winslow, Adam, you brought him up when we did the Twitter spaces at the very beginning of the season. And, you know, everybody's talking about Dame being back. Everybody's talking about Anthony Simons, Nurkic, about Josh Hart and Jeremy Grant, Gary Payton. And nobody was really talking about him. And you brought him up and you were like, you got to watch this guy. He's going to make a difference. And he has been. He's been doing really well.
Yeah. on a Blazers team where height is the biggest commodity for the Blazers. If you looked at previous rosters, it's been Dame and CJ. You know, the backcourt's been pretty small. It's hard to play defense when you're that height. And, you know, they usually have to outscore their opponents rather than stop their opponents from scoring.
Right.
So with a guy like Justice Winslow, who's 6'7", and, you know, big, can defend multiple positions, and not only that, can play make and make those plays. He's just he's a good contributor and a good guy to have on any unit, first unit, second unit. Just same as Josh Hart, another guy who can fit into any role. We saw when Dame and Simons were out last season, he was able to step in and score like nobody's business. So
yeah,
having players that can come in and fill those roles is essential, especially like Jeremy Grant, who's you know, started out in the league as a hustler, as a second effort guy, and now all of a sudden he's getting buckets. So
yeah.
The Blazers are like the Swiss Army knife team.
Well, they just do what they can do. But I can tell, Adam, you've learned this game. We've been talking basketball since Adam was 1 or 2 years of age. So he loves the game, very knowledgeable about the game. So Grasshopper, you've learned your crap.
So I have to ask about that because Adam, I did an interview with Adam a while back, and one of the things he was talking about was when he was a teenager, and because he hadn't really played competitively when he was younger, and you know, when he was realizing that he could play basketball. And I remember, Adam, you telling me how you realized that you could dunk. You didn't know you could dunk until your coach, what was the story that your coach dared you to or something?
In the middle of a lunch break, he would bet me like $5.
Yeah.
If I could dunk. And I, up to that point, I hadn't really tried. My athleticism was kicking in. After that, I was like, hey, Dad, there might be something to this basketball. We might have to work on it. So,
yeah. So
Adam always played basketball, dear. Always. I mean, every season he played, he was on the team.
Yeah. Yeah.
He practiced year round. Always had a court or basketball, a goal at my home so he could play anytime he wanted with his buddies. But Adam loved music. He was equally as talented in music, plays about 5 instruments, and he composes.
Yeah.
So he was very talented in everything he's ever done.
So I have to ask about this because we kind of put it out there for people to ask some questions. And this one is actually from my mom, who also is a Trailblazers fan, and you know, she's part of why I was a Trailblazers fan. And I have to throw this up there because I think it's really interesting with all of this. So this is from let's see, where are we here? So she said, I want to know when he first realized he could fly toward the hoop. Did it just happen one day, or did he set out to do it? How did he develop into the glide? And I think that this is so interesting because, Adam, I remember so distinctly that story of when there's like this moment where you realized you could dunk. And so, Clyde, I'm curious from you, you know, you started playing and then did you just one day realize you could do it, or how did that start for you?
Well, thank you, Julie. That's a great question. And she looks pretty cool with the glasses on, but so she got to be cool, but it starts with a thought, right? I was a martial artist at a young age. And so I was always working out, doing weights and calisthenics, push-ups, all that. And so when I started to play more basketball, age 12, 13, 14, what I saw was Julius Erving was the guy that I really enjoyed watching. And so one thing I noticed about him was he had these big old hands and he could jump to the basket from far away. And he would, you know, did incredible stuff. He was an all-around player, but his athleticism set him apart, right? And so I started, and there was a guy named Marcus Johnson who played at UCLA. He had this incredible high vertical leap. And they used to have articles about what he did to attain that vertical leap.
Okay.
And I tried to double his workouts, and it worked out for me. You know, they always say the harder you work, the luckier you get, right? And so between Julius Erving trying to emulate what he did and Marcus Johnson with a very high vertical, that's how it became the glide. But a lot of work, a lot of study. You got to be a student of the game, and it's got to be an original thought. You know, it's nobody made me do it. This was my own thoughts, and I was very fortunate to gather the resources to be able to do it.
Yeah, that's really interesting how you made a conscious choice to kind of go for that. And Adam, I hear a little bit of that in how you've talked about learning and playing as well.
Yeah. But for me, I had the fortunate ability to like Google my father and copy everything that I saw in the video. So that was what I did. I didn't get to see Dr. J. So
he was special. Oh, he was one of the greatest of all time. Dr. J was my man. But I also like watching Clyde Frazier because he had the name Clyde.
Right.
Now,
right.
Think about it. Not many kids had the name Clyde back
right.
then. And
yeah.
certainly not Drexler. So I'm thinking, boy, I got an unusual name. It was a source of a lot of kidding from my peers, right? But it turned out to be really good for the NBA.
Yeah. Well, and Glide, I mean, it's a perfect rhyme. Where did that start? Do you remember where that started?
It started in high school because I would take off from so far back. You know, back then you had to have a nickname if you were cool.
Yeah, yeah.
George, the Iceman, Gervin, Dr. J, you know, they had Earl, the Pearl, Monroe. They had all these great nicknames for the Magic Johnson. So when Clyde the Glide was born, I was thinking, phew, I got away with one. Because one, it wasn't corny, right?
Right.
Two, it was appropriate. So I kind of liked it.
Yeah.
Possibly the coolest nickname in the history of sports. I don't know. That's just my opinion. We got to poll that on Twitter.
Yeah, we do. We do. Because really, like, it's solid. It is a solid, solid nickname for sure.
Adam the Glide doesn't work.
We were talking about that last week. We were talking about that last week with shading, because there have been a lot of people talking about how his dunks look and how he's kind of gliding. And we were laughing that Shaden's a lot harder to rhyme with.
No, Adam has crazy hop. He has the same athleticism. He's just got to get healthy. But he's had a lot of fun in his career pursuing his basketball interests. And it's been great to watch him as his father.
Absolutely. So we've got a couple questions here that people threw out there for you from when we posted that we were going to have you on the show. So I'm going to go through a couple of those and we'll kind of talk about those. Okay. Let's put these up here. So there's a couple here that I'm going to go through that all kind of go together. So this is from Eric Oswald. He says, when's the last time you talked with Terry Porter? Who do you still keep in touch with from the Blazer era? And piggybacking onto that, we have this one. What was it like playing with Jerome Kersey? That comes from Tara, Team Mom. And Sean asks, Clyde, your favorite teammates in Portland? He also asks about food, but I'm curious about the teammates. And, you know, who were your favorite teammates to play with? Who you've stayed in touch with now as well?
Well, that's a great question. I've been fortunate to have some great teammates. And if you're fortunate enough to play team sports professionally, you know there's some incredible guys with incredible stories. And the reason they got there is because they're incredible men, right? And so guys like Kenny Carr, who lives in Portland, Oregon, still keep in touch with KC. Darnell Valentine, Michael Thompson, Kiki Vandeweghe, all those guys I still keep in touch with. Steve Johnson, the great Steve Johnson. The guys I played with, guys like Terry Porter, talk to Terry and Buck Williams all the time. Jerome, Duck, Cliff, Drazen Petrovic are no longer with us, but I love those guys. Trust me.
Yeah.
And we all, you know, RIP guys, but they were great teammates and just good guys. But for the most part, Lafayette Lever was a friend of mine. Audie Norris. I had so many great teammates through the years. Calvin Natt. I mean, all of those guys were outstanding.
And Adam, you grew up around these guys, I'm sure, being, you know, teammates of your dad. Did you realize growing up what you were growing up around?
Not really. And the weirdest one of all is I had no clue. I was like growing up hanging out with a Splash brother and Clay Thompson. And that was, you know, at the time we're just kids, we're running around and stuff.
Yeah.
So when I saw draft night that he got drafted, I was like, what, Clay? So, but the Blazers, like in Portland, we had a it was like a family community. We always saw each other. We were always hanging out, and then we'd, you know, just gravitate towards other things in life. But I think me, my sister, my brother, and a lot of other, you know, Blazers kids still keep in touch with each other. We still still talk to the Porters. We still talk to the Thompsons. Yeah. the Williams. Yeah, we always talk to everybody.
Everybody. But okay, let's go back to food. My favorite food in Portland.
Was important.
Ringside on Burnside. That was a spot after games. That's where we used to go. All the good steaks. Oh, my God. You needed it. Because in basketball, you lose so much weight, you got to replenish.
Right.
Ringside was always there. And my favorite breakfast spot, Cafe Dewberry. But you can get dinner there as well. But that was one of my favorites. And I tell you what, I miss the French toast and the peppered steak.
Listen, Adam has recommended that.
I don't miss it because I just had it.
I was going to say, I think twice you've said, you got to go eat at this place when I've been in Portland. And then I didn't see it until it was too late. But next time I'm in Portland, I'm going to check that place out. Do you know the first one you mentioned, is that place still there? Do you know?
Well, it's been about 3-4 years since I've been there. And since before COVID, I haven't been there since COVID has hit. But I plan to go there in the next few months and spend some time, as always. All my kids were born in Portland, Oregon. And you got to kind of sneak in and out because you know so many people.
Right.
And some people get offended if you don't tell them, hey, I was here for 2 days.
Right.
How many people can you see? How many people can you see in 2 days? Come on.
Yeah. Well, and you can't really announce that you're going to be in Portland or that's going to create something.
But it's a good thing. It's always been a good thing.
Yeah, for sure. I know that, you know, I think even though it's been years since you played there, you still are so loved. I mean, every time I'm around Blazer, you know, you see pictures of the games and things like that. You still see people wearing your jersey. I've got your jersey. I wore my Clyde shirt today. My Clyde Drexler shirt today in honor of this.
I am honored. And, you know, I was there almost 12 years. That's a long time to be in one franchise. And I would have stayed had they not started tearing apart a championship team. Think about it. We traded Duckworth. We got rid of the coach. And Utah, who we were beating, and San Antonio as well, they kept their nucleus intact. And we were younger than they were. But they tore our team apart. So in an effort to keep trying to, you know, win a championship, I was forced to go to Houston.
Yeah, it's interesting because, again, this is where the comparisons come in. We hear a lot of people having these conversations about, you know, comparing you and Dame in that way as well, because Damian Lillard has been with the franchise now for almost a decade, and people, you know, every year there's rumors that come up and people, the media really pushing him to try to get him to move. And I'm curious what you think about all that. What do you think about all this push for Dame to go to a different team? You've got some experience with this.
I got a lot of experience, but you know, here's what I thought. And that's why I stayed for almost 12 years. They were the team that invested in me in the draft. And so I wanted to show that loyalty. As long as they're committed to winning. Now, the minute I see you're not trying to win a championship, we got a problem.
Right.
Because as a player, you only got so many years. It's just common sense, right? And so the fans, you know, they deserve an opportunity to win year after year. And so the players know when you make ridiculous moves. But if they just talk to the players, that stuff would never happen. I don't know who makes these bad decisions. Unbelievable, all these years.
Yeah, it's interesting. That's such an interesting perspective for people who, you know, for fans who aren't inside that. Because I think fans, especially Portland fans, I always hear that I see too, on my perspective, Portland fans are so different, it seems. You know, they're very loyal. You have players come in that
they're the best.
You have players that come in that barely play at all. And fans will love them for years to come, no matter where they go. And so I feel like, you know, that's a really special thing where some teams you see people, you see fans driving players out and trying to get rid of them.
They had a consecutive sellout streak before I got there. And luckily, we were able to keep that going even after I left. So that tells you that they love their team, no matter who's on it. And so the guys usually respond to that. And that's the reason there's such a good chemistry with the community.
Yeah. So one thing I think a lot of people have always wondered is what is the experience of coming from like a big basketball city like Houston and a big team and you're highly publicized, I think even more so than probably the Trailblazers at the time, U of H. Yeah. Coming from that where you're big time media and moving from the South to a small market team in Portland, Oregon?
Well, as a young black man, well, Portland had about two black guys when I got there. That's not counting the bus driver. I'm kidding. I'm just being silly. But the Northwest is a liberal area. And so people don't see color there as much as they do in the South. And so that was a eye-opening experience for me. You know, I grew up in black schools, black churches, you know, black college at University of Houston, where even though it was completely mixed. But for the most part, when you go to Oregon, it was 97% Caucasian, which was different. But the people were so nice and inviting. I mean, I've never had a better time in my entire life. I raised all of my kids there. I stayed there for about 15 years after my career was over. And I will always consider Portland, Oregon home.
Yeah.
I will tell you that. But as a 21-year-old black man coming from a city, you know, it was a melting pot, a United right. Nations kind of atmosphere in Houston with tons of money because Houston is the number one oil-producing city in the country. And so that was big. So you had a lot of access to everything, right, at that time. And going to Portland, I think that the population was 630,000 or something in 1983. And the town closed. It seemed like I lived downtown, city center, and it looked like the town closed around 6:30, maybe 7 o'clock if you on Friday or Saturday. So as a 21-year-old, I'm thinking, hey, where is everyone at? Thank God I had. So I ended up in the gym. And because of that, it made me a better player. So God is good. You know?
Yeah, and I think you were supposed to be a Knick. You were supposed to get drafted by the Knicks.
Supposedly. And they, of course, they wanted me a free agent. But because they didn't draft me, I stayed in Portland because they did draft me. That's why I was there 12 years. It was called loyalty.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a honestly, and I think that that's something that's that thought process has shifted a lot in today's NBA versus I think there's a lot more of, you know, changing, like players are going to different teams a lot faster. I feel like maybe that's in my head, but I feel like
it's
all about
the money.
Yeah.
It's all about the money and they're teaming up to try to get rings. But you know, it seems like everyone's getting paid. Back when we played, you had to make the All-Star team 4 or 5 years. Show a general manager that you're worthy of being a franchise player, and they might give you a decent contract. Now it seems like guys get max contracts just on potential, and they don't really have a lot to prove. And so if they're not happy, hold up. You didn't have steak at pregame meal for me. I'm going to go over here where they do have steak. There seems to be a lot of that, and I don't know if that's good for sports. You know, because people get used to seeing you in a certain jersey. You need to stay with that team. But it also works both ways. Teams have traded guys through the years. And so sometimes it needs to be a little bit more loyalty on the part of both the team and the actual player.
Yeah. I think one thing that from your era of playing is people didn't really team up. You were with your team and you were competing against your friends. And so from that era, aside from Hakeem, who would you have teamed up with? Because I know the Jordan Drexler combination was almost a thing in Portland.
Would have been
so
great.
Close.
I'll tell you what, they won the coin flip. They could have drafted Hakeem Olajuwon. They lost the coin flip. Portland did. Oof. And so they so now they're thinking, who do we pick? Michael Jordan. We got Sam Bowie. We need a 7-footer. Michael Thompson, Klay Thompson's dad, said in the paper, if they pick Jordan, Clyde and Jordan will dominate the league for the next 10-15 years. The general manager got so mad at Michael Thompson that he threatened to fine him if he talked to the media again about that. Between the players, it was easy. Get Jordan. We're going to run the thing. We're going to make it good. We're going to be good for a long time. But the general managers had another thought. And not that they were bad guys. They just didn't know conventional wisdom. The players always know. I will tell you that. We knew back then.
Yeah. That's really interesting. You don't hear that a whole lot. You know,
no.
I always heard the perspective of, well, the Blazers had Clyde, so they didn't necessarily need Michael Jordan. That's the perspective I always heard. So that's an interesting, I mean, the two of you together, that would have been something. And I remember growing up and watching that. It was never the Trailblazers versus the Bulls. It was Clyde versus Michael. Like that was the rivalry there, even more so than the two teams, was the two of you. And so actually that kind of leads me to the next couple questions here. Oop, nope, that's not. Adam can cut that out. Okay, so this comes from Lakers Guru. He says, I would love to hear about his matchups with Jordan. I often thought he got the best of Jordan more than any other guards in that early 90s era. Loved him so much, I patterned my jump shot after him. So, and then we also have this guy right here. From Taylor, she says, what was his favorite thing about playing against MJ? I think that there's a lot of questions about Michael Jordan. Obviously, that's a common, I'm sure, something you hear often. And then we had, you know, the documentary that aired. And so there was even more conversation about that. So talk to us about that a little bit.
Well, Dio, first of all, Michael's a friend and he's always been a friend. I've always admired his game and I love playing against him. If it was up to me, I would have played against him every single night because you want to play against the best. It brings out the best in you. And so I had a fair amount of success against Michael, who was a phenomenal player and a great guy, right? But you know, I was a little bit bigger at 6'7", 225, 230. Michael 6'6", 205. And so I could post. I could do some things that were pretty good against the Bulls and had a fair amount of success and loved competing against them. And I would say Michael's game was phenomenal. He was hard to defend because he was so quick off the dribble. You know, he could get by you, and he's going to get that early whistle. You knew that. And he's going to get like 30 shots. And so you had your work cut out for you because he was a premier player each and every night.
Yeah, and it's interesting because now my brain is going in all these directions thinking about the idea of the two of you playing together. So you said that you were the two of you were friends back then as well.
Yeah, we were. We were supposed to head the 1984 Olympic team together, but I came out early as a hardship in 1983, so I was a junior. And so I mean, we played against each other in college, 1982 in the Final Four. Game that they won by 5 points. And so he was aware of me. I'm a year older than Michael. And so it's always a privilege and a pleasure to play against him. Was also a teammate of his on the Dream Team. But let me tell you something. The kind of competitors we were in Portland, we were never afraid of anybody. Bring it on.
Yeah.
the more of a challenge it was, the more fun it was. So that was the era where that's what you took the challenge. You know, and so that was the fun of it to me.
Yeah.
And of course, when you're playing against icons and legends, Magic Johnson, Larry Bird, Michael Jordan, you got Julius Erving, Kareem, all these great players. And you look at what you were able to do against these great legends. You feel good about your body of work and what you were able to contribute to your team. And so I have no complaints. Everywhere I go, people, you know, they honor your achievements, your production, the competitiveness of the game, and how I respected my competitors most of all. Because there were guys, not only Michael, but there were other two guards and small forwards and point guards that you had to guard that would light you up on any given night. Let me just tell you. So you better be ready to play. It wasn't just the superstars. It was guys like Rolando Blackman, Ricky Pierce, Dale Ellis, I mean, Lafayette Lieber, those guys, Joe Dumars, they'll give you 40 on any given night, Reggie Miller. So you had your work cut out for you each and every time you were on the court. Jeff Malone, I can name them all, Jeff Hornacek. I mean, any one of those guys could embarrass you on any given night. Yeah. Great players.
I remember when the Last Dance documentary came out and Adam was saying that you were getting phone calls because this rivalry was kind of built up.
Everyone was like, oh, I had teammates that would come up to me in practice and they'd be doing it, sticking their tongue out and whatever, the Jordan dunk. And then they'd get around me and they'd be, oh, I can't say it around him. Hide the logo on their shoes. I'm like, hey, it's not as deep as you think.
Well, and then Adam, I remember you specifically saying You know, there you're getting these phone calls about this, and your dad's out there golfing with Michael Jordan.
Yeah,
so everybody's making it out to be a thing that it's not.
It was this grand conspiracy. I had been convinced, like, okay, there's some huge rivalry that transcends all, you know, basketball and competitiveness. And then, you know, I call my dad one day. He's like, oh yeah, I just got through playing golf with Michael Jordan. And I was like, what?
No, the rivalry was he was the best guard in the East and I was the best guard in the West for years. Yeah. And so finally, we made it. I made it to the NBA Finals first, 1990 against the Pistons. And then the next year, Jordan made it to the Finals for the first time. They beat the Pistons and then they beat the Lakers. Okay, so we made it to the Finals first, 1990. We lose to the Pistons, a very good team, the Bad Boys. The next year, we got the best record in the entire league. 63 wins. We lose to the Lakers in the Western Conference Finals. They were a good team. They upset us, but they played the Bulls in the finals and the Bulls beat them. Michael's first year making it to the NBA Finals. And the next year, 92, Portland and Chicago meet in the finals. So there was a big buildup because both teams were so good for so long. That's why it was such a good build. It was necessary. We were a good team. I was the best player on our team, perhaps. He was the best player on his team. We had incredible synergy throughout the league. We were dominating for many years. And so people were looking forward to that. Well, I don't regret anything because playing against the best always is a lot of fun for me and our team, right? So win, lose, or draw, you know, you were there. There are a lot of teams that would like to be there, right? And so they weren't. They got beat. And so there's only going to be one team left standing. So you got to be really lucky to be that team. But for the most part, that year I had a meniscus surgery that I needed to have in March, but I put it off. And so they're draining my knee with all this fluid after every game. And so when we played the Bulls, I had gone through two or three months of getting my knee drained once a week. So my knee was getting really weak. So I was healthy, but not 100%. And so I would have liked to have been 100% healthy. But better, you know, better to play hurt than not play at all. It was my mantra. And so back then, if you were injured in any way, you just kept it to yourself or you didn't play. You don't put a bullseye on your injury because guys were mean back then. They come and kick you in your leg. You know, they So you got to suck it up and play or don't. But I chose to play and I wouldn't have it any other way. But that's the only thing that put a damper on it for me. And if you can remember Paul Allen in his book, the last book he wrote, he said one of the most amazing things he's ever seen. And he listed a few things. But one of them was Clyde Drexler playing against the greatest player in the world, Michael Jordan, and on one leg and doing more than holding his own.
that is an accomplishment.
I don't even want to like pass up on the fact that like he just casually said, yeah, I had to go through Kareem and Magic and those guys. I'm like,
they were really good, trust me.
And people forget you're beating out teams. Like you're beating Stockton and Malone out. You're beating David the Suns. Robinson. You're beating David Robinson and the Spurs. You're beating out these legendary teams and these legendary players. And I think it's kind of weird that no one talks about the East versus West.
Nope.
That was the biggest rivalry, I think, of that time in terms of the guards.
That's sports, though. You know, people talk about what's interesting, and they don't really care too much about the facts sometimes. They just watch the teams that they love. And that's okay because we play the game because we love it, not for anything else.
I think there's been such a shift, too, from being more of a team. I mean, it's obviously still very much a team sport. But as far as how fans consume it, rather than having people that are diehard fans of teams, it seems like you have a lot more people that are diehard fans of players. And so I think where we used to talk about, well, this team has a rivalry with this team, now we talk a lot more about, well, this player has a rivalry with this player. And I think that that maybe impacts the way that people talk about the NBA years ago as well. Even though at the time we were talking about this team and this team, or the East and the West, now, looking back on it, people are comparing this player versus this player because that's kind of the narrative that happens now a lot.
Which is not fair because it's team sport, right? It's not golf.
Right.
It's not tennis. You can have 50 points and 25 rebounds, but if I miss the two free throws at the end and we lose, the guy who's on the other team is a winner who didn't even play in the game. He's a champion. But you could have 50 points and 25 rebounds, but because your team didn't win, you're not a champion. See, that's completely ridiculous, right? It's a team sport. You got to do the best you can. And if you're lucky enough and good enough, your team can win. But quite often, the best team does not win. But most of the time, they do.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you see that. You can look at some of the teams currently in the NBA that on paper look like they're stacked teams, but they struggle and they don't do so well. So, I mean, I can think of one team in particular that is in the same city that I'm in.
This entire beginning of the season has been, it's like somebody flipped the standings upside down. You see a lot of teams who were primed to be competitors, primed to make, you know, make deep runs in the playoffs, and they're struggling out of the gates. You got the Golden State Warriors who are struggling to get wins right now with nearly the same roster.
Yeah, but what you got to understand is if you've been in the game for a while, you're a seasoned veteran, you don't make any judgments until after the All-Star break. Everything that's happening now is all preliminary. You know, back when we were playing, we would always say, you know, even the worst team could have you beaten by halftime. But the second half, you come out and take care of business.
Listen, I don't love that right now because the Blazers are doing really well, and I would like to judge based off of that. Yeah, can we pull them out of this conversation, please?
We hope that's going to be their norm.
Yes. Yeah, they were like 4-0, and I'm like, that's it. We're winning it all. This is the year. They're 4-0.
It could happen. You know, we're keeping our fingers crossed.
Yeah, we are.
With that, if we can continue to play gritty, if we can continue to surprise these teams with making good plays, not only people making good plays, but people are showing up. Game in and game out, someone's stepping up, whether it's a rookie, whether it's Grant, whether it's Simons, whether it's Dame. People are just showing up, and if Dame can get other people to show up alongside him, they can beat some of these good teams.
I agree with that. He's going to have a lot of help. Simons is very capable.
He's a bucket.
I think Chauncey is getting the most out of him. It's given him a new role on that team that he's embracing. But a good pickup in Jeremy Grant because he's got a lot to prove as a player coming from Detroit. Josh Hart, a good opportunity for him to show that he's a primetime starter on a good team, something that he hasn't had a chance to do. And so there are a lot of guys, Justice Winslow with something to prove. A lot of guys, the two rookies last year, Little and Sharp, those guys have to prove that they belong. And so there are a lot of guys who are going to have something to prove, which is great if you're the coach because you give them the opportunity to do that.
Well, we have a lot of really good young guys too. I mean, our rookie this year, Shaedon Sharpe, is just – I mean, he's making all kinds of headlines. People are talking about him. We've got one guy that I've been really excited about since last season in Keon Johnson, who I feel like has shown massive improvement since last season. Point. And so they've got these young guys, too, where we've got this, you know, the continued conversation has been around Dame and how he's aging. And we still haven't won a championship. But what I'm seeing them do somehow is build around Dame to try to win now while still maintaining a young core that's going to come up behind him and be the future of this team. So it's not like he's done and the team has to rebuild completely from scratch. They've kind of built this team that's going to come up behind him and be good, hopefully.
Yeah, no, that's a good thought because they're not mortgaging the future right now. They got a good mix of experienced players and some very young players. I think that's always been a good strategy to have. And all of the good franchises for years kept that strategy, a good mix of veterans and young players.
And one of our veterans hasn't played yet in Gary Payton Jr. So excited to see because he's got something to prove coming off a championship season with the Golden State Warriors.
He's got his money. He has no, he's one of those guys that you know he's going to play hard. He's fit from the mold of his dad. They want to D you up. They want to stop you. And they want to prove that you can't stop them. So he's a competitor. I like that. That was a great pickup.
Yeah. He's maybe the person I'm the most excited about adding this year. And he hasn't even played. Like you said, can you imagine? I mean, you look at how they're playing defense and you said something about this earlier in the podcast, but I feel like in the recent years, our defensive strategy has been score 150 and hope that's enough.
Dame and CJ McCollum who can score on anybody in this league.
It's
great to have that kind of firepower, but on the defensive end, one thing we just didn't have was height. So
yeah,
bigger players are able to go in there and score, and we kind of can't slow them down. So scoring was the name of the game. But with
scoring, good health, Nurkic has to stay healthy, and Dame has to stay healthy. And as you get older, it's not so easy. But he's a professional, takes good care of his body. Yeah. So I expect him to have another stellar year. Dame is one of the greatest players in the game today, and he's so much fun to watch because he's no nonsense. He gives you what he has. He doesn't say anything stupid away from the game. Think about it. He represents the Blazers in the best possible fashion.
He does. Yeah. Yeah, he's a great player to have as a franchise player, to have kind of being the face of this team right now. Yeah. Okay, so a couple other questions here that we have.
What you got, Dio?
We've got... All right, so this comes from Dane. He says, besides Jordan, who is the toughest opponent for you throughout your career?
Well, Dane, that's a great question. Obviously, you're an NBA, the best players in the world. Some of them you know their name, like Michael Jordan or, you know, Reggie Miller or Dwayne Wade or Kobe. Some of them you don't, but those guys are coming after you every night. Why? Because they want to make a name for themselves. And so it's always the guys, some nights, especially when I was with Houston, with the Rockets, Hakeem, some guy who no one knew much about would have a really good first half. And Hakeem would look at me and say, who is that guy? Where did he come from? It was so funny because that's the NBA. There's so many guys that can light you up. So you have to be ready night in and night out. So my toughest competitors were... But guys like Dominique Wilkins, you know, George Gervin, I played against George when he was at the end of his career, but boy, he was still very, very good. Played against Julius Erving, Larry Bird. I mean, Larry Bird, you're not going to stop these guys. They're too good. Julius Erving, I mean, he was the nicest guy, but when he got between those lines, trust me, he had a real killer instinct. And so all these guys were tough, and they don't get enough credit. James Worthy was tough. Magic was tough to guard. Byron Scott, all those Lakers. But you had guys like Kevin Johnson, who's a tremendous player. Rolando Blackman, Ricky Pierce, Dale Ellis. I mean, all these Mitch Richmond, all these guys who could play. So you got to bring your best to stop them. You know guys like John Stockton. I didn't guard John very often, but when I did, he was so quick. I mean, he's so crafty. But so many good players throughout the years. Chris Mullin, I can name quite a few.
Yeah.
And it was a privilege to play against them.
Yeah. I think one of the last questions we have, if we could pull that up.
Yep. I think it's this one.
Oop. And before we pull it up, I just want to preface it with a lot of players in today's game, or a lot of people have this argument, like new versus old, and what older players would do in today's era and what today's era players would do in the era back then. And I think the weirdest thing about it is the comparison of the play style now. You're saying that if players or legends played in this era, they wouldn't shoot threes. I think that's weird. They would adapt, obviously. But kind of talk about how you would fare in today's NBA. Well,
yeah, so this one comes from Josh Rodriguez. This one comes from Josh Rodriguez for all of our listening on audio. How would he fare in today's NBA?
Well, I'm going to steal a quote from somebody else. You know, I still think I could get 20 points a game, you know, at 60.
Listen, that's fair.
I think the best players, honestly, let me quit being silly here. The best players would do well in any era. The reason they were good is because, one, they were smart. They had weapons you could not stop. And if you stopped one, they'd figure out another way to beat you. And so they were gamers. They were smart. And so the best players of any era would be good in any era because they'd find a way to beat you. That's why they're good. That's the best way I can put it. But I'll give you an idea of adapting. My first 7 years in the league, we didn't shoot threes. It was considered a bad shot. Well, 1990, it became a big thing. Hey, every team is shooting threes. Guess who started shooting threes? I did. I made the NBA All-Star team as one of the top 10 three-point shooters in the league.
It was in the three-point contest.
Thank you. So that just shows you how quickly the good players can adapt if they want to. And so that's good players are good players for a reason. They would do well in any era.
Yeah, I like that answer. Adam, I remember you talking. Hold up.
Excuse me, Dia.
No, go for that, it. Go.
Couple that with no hand checking.
I just want to clarify for all the fans. That. Like back then when he played, you could put a hand on somebody.
Hit an elbow. And push them away. Now, and you still did what you did. You take that away, now you got to back up. Now, I drove to the basket more than any player in the history of the game. I guarantee you that. There's no doubt about that. And I would elevate if you didn't get there quick enough, the play was over, right? So imagine with no hand checking how much I would drive to the basket today. Oh, my God. I would shoot threes, but let me tell you something. And then teams, when we played, every team had two or three seven-footers to stop guys like me from getting to the basket. Now teams are going small. The biggest guys like 6'7". Are you kidding me? I'd have like 25 rebounds a game. but you know, that's the competitive side of me talking.
Right,
though I'm 60, you know, I can still dream. But you know, it's a different game. I love the way the game is being adapted today. It's still fun to watch, but it's totally different from the way we play. No mistake.
Yeah, I think that that's actually one of the things that's so beautiful about the game of basketball is just the way that it can evolve and the way that players can evolve and the game can kind of change. But I think you're right. I think the players that are good in one era would absolutely adapt. I think, you know, there's this competitive nature that is just you don't stop that. And that will drive you to some great lengths. And I think that combined with just the athleticism and the skill, you're going to adapt. You'd be fine. You'd be great.
Adapt. Not only would you adapt, you'd be one of the best.
You'd thrive.
So take a guy like Isaiah Thomas. He played 12 years, 11-year All-Star, right? Or 11-11, whatever it was, he was phenomenal. But, you know, people don't talk about him much. That guy was a killer. That guy was one of the best players on the planet for 11 years. Can you believe how good he was? People barely mentioned his name.
Yeah, and mind you, he was going behind the back, between the legs, in an era where he could be pushed.
Yeah.
Have you ever tried to dribble while being pushed?
And seven-footers behind him, you know? So just think about how hard it was to score back then, as opposed to today's game. I mean, it's light years away. It's a totally different game. That's all I can say. Every team had two or three seven-footers because of that. You need to protect your basket.
Yeah.
You know, and so
Adam, I remember
you didn't do that. No, go ahead, Dia.
I was just going to say, Adam, I remember a story that you told when we talked about how you were playing. I want to say it was when I don't remember which team's camp it was, but your dad was telling you not to shoot threes.
Oh, with the Rockets.
Do you remember this story?
Yeah.
Okay. It was, tell that story. That's great.
Mike D'Antoni walked in and said, "Hey guys, for this team, we're not going to shoot any shots inside of the 3-point line. We're only going to shoot threes and layups, and that's it. Nothing else." And he would stop practice if you shot a mid-range shot. He would stop practice and give us a lecture about why it's not a good shot. And after the first practice, I called my dad, and he's like, "So what happened? What'd you do?" And I was like, "Well, I shot a bunch of threes." And he's like, "Why would you do that? You know, go to the basket, tear the rim down. Go to your mid-range. Go to your post." I was like, "We can't do that. Any of that. We're not allowed." And it was just this weird conversation because that was the first time it was a clash of styles. To me, my whole life, my father had taught me, be efficient. Go to your mid-range. Go to your spots. And we were running like a fire drill to get to the three-point line.
And that's a recipe for disaster. I stick with my guns. Mid-range, getting to the basket and posting will make you more efficient and will help your team win. And Chris Paul is one of the few guys that still does that. And I love it because he had never changed his game. That doesn't mean he can't shoot threes. He's trying to win by being efficient. Anybody who says we only shoot threes doesn't really know the game. Trust me.
And a famous dad quote is, any shot you can make is a good shot.
Hey, listen.
Hey, I've never seen a coach take a guy out for being 7 for 7.
Right. I fully embrace that. There have been a couple games where there was one infamously where Dame made a shot and it was called a bad shot. And I kept saying, it's not a bad shot. It went in. That's a great shot. He scored. We're calling that good. So I can get on board with this. I'm gonna save that one.
No doubt. I mean, you're trying to win. Efficiency wins games. So go to any game, part of your game that you know you can make, and you're going to be a good player.
Yeah. Yeah.
Adam, you know, guys come out there and they shoot those long threes trying to be Steph Curry, Klay Thompson. Those guys are special. That's what they do. But if you had, I mean, they play to their strengths. That is their strength. Yeah, so that's why they're so good.
Do you think Giannis should be out there shooting from the logo?
No.
Shaq?
No, but listen, when you've got him, like you've got logo Lillard, you're going to let him shoot from that. I'll tell you that.
That's his strength. He's so good at it.
Yeah, so good at it. Adam, is there anything you want to add or any other questions you want to throw in there?
No, I just hope Blazers fans got a chance to kind of see what it's like from the perspective of a legend and someone who's done just about everything there is to do with an NBA organization.
Yeah.
No, I tell you what, God is good. I've been blessed to play a sport that I love for a living, played against some of the best players in the world, and had so much fun throughout the process. Some guys are so frustrated and so much, they get too mechanical. I enjoyed every single minute. I'd be eating right before the game, 30 minutes before game time, I'd be eating a hot dog, reading a book in my in my suit. And so the coaches and the other players would go, hey, are you playing tonight? I go, yeah. When the game starts, I'll be ready. But I enjoyed every single moment of every game because I knew it was a privilege to play in the NBA, which was my dream from day one. So the moment I put on that Trailblazer jersey, it was on.
Yeah. Well, Clyde, we appreciate you being here so much. And I think we have some plans for you maybe in the future. We'll talk about that more later. But we finally have Adam on Twitter. You can find him at DrexGlides2, and I am Deandra Ann, DiandraAnn. Clyde, I'm pretty sure you're not on social media.
Nothing.
Okay, so we won't plug yours. It doesn't exist.
No, ain't gonna ever happen. How can you be private being on social media?
And look, I give you so much credit for that, and I think it is definitely a smart way to go.
Well, thank you, Dia, but I want to say, you and Adam are the current dream team. It's been a pleasure to be here with you both. And
well,
I wish you all the best in the future.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Go Blazers.
To our listeners, make sure you're subscribed to our YouTube channel and our podcast feed so you don't miss out on the latest episodes and updates. We appreciate your support as we grow this. You know, with anything like this, we're starting from scratch. So likes, subscribes, shares, comments, ratings, that all of that helps us with this podcast, and we just really appreciate the support. Thank you so much for listening to the Shooting Hoops podcast. We will be back with more next week.
And have a Drexcellent day, Blazers fans.
Hey, I like that.
You're listening to Shooting Hoops with your hosts, Dia Miller and Adam Drexler.